This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m.
Only double.
Grab your pants.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to 3CR Breakfast. Today is Tuesday, the 19th of August, 2025. It's 7 a.m. And firstly, we'd just like to thank the Radioactive Show, 3CR's national program on nuclear peace and energy issues. My name is Fung, and in the studio with me today is Juliet. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Fung?
I'm well, thank you. We always make it a point not to talk about the weather on the show, but I just feel like we have to talk about this morning.
Yes, it was very cold. I think as I was riding past Brunswick Street Oval, it looked like it was white, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, I kept getting a message in my car warning me of potential icy roads. But, yeah, for listeners, I was sitting in Studio One and then Juliet walked in, very like covered up, wearing her bike helmet and scarves. And anyway, I was very impressed with the fact that you rode
Yes.
to the studio today.
Yeah, I did not know how cold it was till I walked outside.
It's in very for a rude fresh. Awakening. Yeah, yes. Yeah. We were just saying how we keep having these moments where we think maybe winter is over, but then you just get one of these mornings where it's like 1-2 degrees, and especially brutal at 6:30 in the morning or 6 whenever we're getting up.
Yes, yes.
Are you still playing footy in this weather?
We actually had our final game on Saturday, which it was freezing and raining and muddy. It was actually our very last time using our oval because they're refurbishing it, thank goodness.
Okay.
And it just became like a sloppy mud pit.
Yeah.
Absolutely chaotic. But it was very nice. We actually had a special guest come to watch, one of my colleagues from the 3CR training.
Ooh.
So Andy from the dogs program.
Because
it turns out that, Andy knows one of my other teammates as well. So wanted Small to come world. Along and see what all the fuss was about.
And did you put on a good show?
I think we did. We did lose and not score a single point, but we did really try hard.
Yeah.
So, yes.
And I'm sure just like the state of the oval with all the mud and stuff just meant it maybe like looked really dramatic.
Think it did look pretty dramatic.
Okay, yes. Awesome. Well, looking forward to more AFL updates next season.
Yes.
With a potentially nicer oval.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's hope so.
Okay. Let's have a chat about what is coming up on today's show. We're starting the program this morning by revisiting an interview that I had with Cher Tan for this week's episode of Women on the Line. So this was this aired on 3CR yesterday, and for the show I spoke with Cher, who is an essayist and critic, and she recently published an essay on why Spotify is worse than you think. So we'll be playing an excerpt from that conversation today, touching on things like the way it uses dark patterns, its ties to the military-industrial complex, and how it is stripping artists of their rights and dignity.
And then at 7:30, we're going to be chatting to Mel Barker from Western Port Biosphere about, the future of Western Port Bay and sustainability, including a proposed renewable energy terminal, which is going through stages of development, but also what that might mean for the very fragile wetland ecosystem in Western Port Bay.
And at 7:45, we'll be listening to part one of a conversation that I recorded with Bea, who regular listeners of 3CR would know. Bea leads the Asian Migrant Project at Vixen, providing outreach and support work, advocating for sex workers and especially Asian migrant sex workers. We'll be speaking about the ongoing raids that are being conducted by Australian Border Force targeting Asian migrant sex workers, as well as their new project called Rising Red Lantern. So that's coming out at 7:45, and you'll be hearing the second part of that conversation at 8:15 as well.
And then in between those two conversations, we're going to be chatting to Rosa from Boycott Caltex, a grassroots collective of activists from the pro-Palestine climate and environment movement who are campaigning for a free Palestine through a consumer boycott of Caltex, among some other petrol stations as well. And we'll be chatting about the upcoming National Weekend of Action.
So it's going to be a big show. Keep a lock to 3CR. We'll be back with the news headlines in just a moment.
Some folks know about it, some don't. Some will learn to shout it, some won't. But sooner or later, baby, here's a ditty. Say you're gonna have to get right down to the real nitty gritty. Let's get right down to the real nitty gritty.
You're listening to 3CR Breakfast, and these are the news headlines for Tuesday, the 19th of August, 2025. Israel has announced preparations to forcibly evacuate Palestinians to southern Gaza. The announcement comes after Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu declared that the military has been given the green light to dismantle Gaza City in the north and Al-Mawasi further to the south. Hind Kudari, reporting for Al Jazeera from Deir el-Balah in central Gaza, stated that Palestinians are exhausted. They have been on the move for the past 2 years and they have already lost everything. They lost their houses. They lost their family members. There's no safe place across the Gaza Strip. So Palestinians, at the end of the day, do not have much choice. They're either going to stay or be arrested or killed. They feel they have nothing to lose. Abdallah Al-Aryan, an associate professor of history at Georgetown University in Qatar, stated that historically, genocides don't end through negotiated solutions. They end because the party committing the genocide is forced to end it through external pressure, and that has not happened yet. Israel's genocide on Gaza has killed at least 61,827 people since October 2023, and malnutrition has killed 251 people so far.
Also in the news, a content warning, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples should note that this headline mentions the name of a deceased person. Aboriginal ballet dancer, author, actor, choreographer, director and gay rights activist Noel Tovey AM has died aged 90. Tovey lived on the streets of Melbourne in his early teens before finding work at Collins Book Depot. The money from this job enabled Tovey to see his first ever ballet performance. Inspired, he studied ballet as a teenager under the Russian-born Madame Senia Borovansky at the National Theatre Ballet School. In January 2015, Tovey was made a member of the Order of Australia for significant service to the performing arts, to Indigenous performers, and as an advocate for the LGBTI community. Later in 2015, Tovey was also inducted to the Victorian Aboriginal Honour Roll. He subsequently inducted into the Australian Dance Awards Hall of Fame in 2017. In his book, And Then I Found Me, Tovey wrote, "Maybe I didn't achieve all that I wanted to, but I ultimately achieved most of what I set out to do. I've inspired and helped many young Aboriginal people by telling my story. That knowledge gives me immense happiness, and I proved that Indigenous actors can hold their own on any stage in the world. I cannot forgive and forget the jealousy or racism that has shown to me in this country that I call home, but I do not hate." In other news this week, polls have closed in Bolivia's presidential and general elections, with the governing socialists expected to lose power after almost 20 years due to a deep economic crisis and division within the leftist coalition. The election is the first time in almost two decades that polling indicates Bolivia's incumbent movement for socialism could face defeat. MAS-affiliated and other left-leaning candidates trail the right-wing opposition by about 10%, according to the latest Ipsos survey done in August. Eight presidential candidates are in the running from the far right to the political left. The two candidates with a comfortable lead are Jorge Tuto Quiroga, and who served as interim president and vice president under former military ruler Hugo Banzer, and Samuel Doria Medina, a wealthy businessman and former planning minister. Bolivia is currently struggling through its worst crisis in a generation, marked by annual inflation of almost 25% and critical shortages of dollars and fuel. This comes after more than a decade of strong growth and indigenous upliftment under former leftist president Evo Morales, who nationalised the gas sector and reinvested the proceeds in two social programs that have halved extreme poverty during his presidency between 2006 and 2019. And finally, in the headlines, last Saturday afternoon, a group gathered at the Parliament House of Victoria for an anti-trans rally publicised as Women Will Speak. This was the fifth event since Kelly J. Keene Minshall's, otherwise known as Posy Parker, Let Women Speak event in February 2023, where a group of neo-Nazis gave now banned fascist salutes on the steps of Victorian Parliament. Activist group Trans Queer Solidarity organised a counter demonstration and stated via social media that trans exclusionary radical feminists oppress other people and collaborate with the colonial state. They agitate for trans women to face more extreme state violence. They do not have an entrenched right to speak. There is no platform for transphobia. Victoria Police declared a designated area around the city in relation to the demonstrations, which grants them power to do stop and search and demand removal of face coverings. At the demonstrations, police were observed to use designated area powers on the pro-trans demonstrators only. While the anti-trans rally was protected by police formation, the pro-trans counter-protest was met with pepper spray and several arrests. These have been the news headlines for Tuesday, 19th of August, 2025, and you're listening to 3CR Breakfast on 855 AM.
3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings, cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au.
Want to become a socially progressive podcaster but don't know where to start?
3CR has a wealth of podcasting knowledge and experience, and we've developed a practical podcast training course to help community voices get into the world of podcasting.
Our two-day in-station course is perfect for new podcasters or people who want to improve their skills and get some insider tips.
Enroll now for our October podcast course.
Full details at 3cr.org.au/podcast services.
Or call the station during business hours on 03 9419 8377.
Enroll now for our October podcast course.
Women on the Line, a radical intersectional current affairs program.
Making space for the voices of women and gender diverse people.
Featuring in-depth conversations with guests from SoCord Australia and beyond.
Ultimately, we're looking to care for country, to continue our culture, to continue our ceremonies, so that our children have a strong sense of self and belonging.
Just because our marginalisation intersects where we're both disabled. It doesn't change your white privilege. It doesn't change your straight privilege. It doesn't change your able-bodied privilege.
Sex work, the word itself, has been such a word with a lot of stigma. However, we cannot ignore that there are women out there who are making their livelihood out of this job.
Listen every Monday morning at 8:30 on 3CR Community Radio 855 AM or stream live on 3cr.org.au.
Love podcasts? We've got you. Find Women on the Line via the Community Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Women on the Line, we're about
feminisms in their multitudes,
First Nations sovereignty,
land back,
trans liberation, poo-poo on the turfs,
abolition,
anti-racism,
sex worker rights,
South liberation,
disability justice,
anti-imperialism,
decolonisation,
an end to borders,
workers' justice,
and so much more.
Women on the Line, broadcasting on the 3CR airwaves since 1986.
Woo! Woo! You're listening to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast on 855 AM, 3CR Digital, and at 3cr.org.au. And you would have just heard the little program promo for Women on the Line, which is the other show that I'm part of. So make sure you tune in to the show on Mondays at 8:30 a.m. And for this week's episode of Women on the Line, I spoke to Cher Tan. Cher is an essayist and critic whose written work has been published widely. Her critically acclaimed debut book, Peripathetic Notes on Unbelonging, is out now with New South Publishing. She also plays music in her spare time and lives and works on unceded Wurundjeri country. In this interview, Cher delves into the dark side of Spotify, its ties to the military-industrial complex, its role in stripping artists of their rights and dignity, as well as the way it has homogenized art and culture. Here is an excerpt of that conversation, which aired on 3CR's Women on the Line yesterday, 18th of August, 2025.
So I wanted to speak to you about the essay that you wrote called Spotify is Worse Than You Think. And just to start, you reference Liz Pelly's book, Mood Machine, The Rise of Spotify and the Costs of the Perfect Playlist, throughout your article. So for listeners who have never heard of this book before, how would you summarize it? And why should people read it?
Yeah, so this book has been a long time in the making. Liz Pelly has been reporting on Spotify specifically as a music journalist since, I think, the early 2010s. And this book's a debut book, and I wrote that essay sort of as a review of the book as well, while inserting my own opinions about Spotify, as well as what I learned from the book itself, which is actually a really a damning investigation and expose into Spotify since the company started in 2006, and you know how it's evolved over the years. And in the book, which you know it's so rich in information about what's going on in the background, and she writes about how the platform is basically a continuation of, you know, one of Thomas Edison's subsidiaries, you know, that famous inventor, Mood Music, and how data was gathered from, you know, particular implementations to sell their products back to the consumers, because I think at the time Edison Inc. had this signature vinyl record type thing called the Diamond Disc. And then from there, Pelly also writes about, you know, how Spotify is an adaptation of Muzak, which, you know, sort of started as a subscription service and was further developed and outsourced to create like so-called the music that we know as Muzak today, right? Like, we know Muzak, it's like this kind of nothing music you hear in hotel toilets, right, or something. And the book has so many interviews. There's like more than 100 interviews, and it digs really deep. It interviews, you know, indie label managers, like musicians themselves, you know, ex-Spotify staff who are obviously de-identified, union reps, and they all talk about how Spotify is seriously changing the landscape for musicians, while also, giving the false promise that the app itself is, meritocratic, which Daniel Ek, the CEO, is constantly going on about in his PR spiels, like simply the will of the people, when certain music becomes popular. But Liz Paley also writes, there are many hidden algorithms and what I call dark patterns that are baked into user experience of the app and, like much of social media, basically. And then it forces independent musicians to think like, pop stars, basically, where you have to have lots of streams in order to make any kind of money at all. But obviously, it's a losing game because we're talking peanuts. Like, Spotify is one of the, everyone knows this. I think it's something that is shared online a lot where they say, musicians get paid one of the lowest per stream. And it's something like, $100 or 30,000 streams. So, you're kind of swimming against the tide, if you decide to participate. And then, of course, we now know that Daniel Ek is very closely associated with this German weapons tech company called Helsing. And in recent times, he's become the chairman of the company as well. And they're looking to expand further into war zones. And, he's mentioned in interviews before. What did he say? He said AI, mass, and autonomy are driving the new battlefield, which, if you want me to parse that, is basically saying he's going all in, he's going to capitalize on war, especially in a time when death is the most profitable business in existence. And while Moon Machine doesn't really go into that too deeply, it talks about all the ways that it actually changes culture and harvests data in a way that contributes to, I guess, what I call the gentrification of the mind, because you are encouraging a certain kind of homogeneity due to seeing, viral or algorithmically friendly creations, right? Like, you want people to hear you or see you. So you see someone becoming viral and you're like, oh, okay, this is maybe how I should do it in order to become an artist or a musician. And that is quite dangerous for arts and culture in general, I think.
There's so much that you've said just now about not just the book, but the way in which Spotify and other big tech companies, but for the purpose of this discussion, Spotify has infiltrated our lives through art, culture, the livelihood of artists, but also, like you said, its involvement or its full participation in the military industrial complex. I was wondering if we could start there. You mentioned this quote that's also in your piece, Gore Capitalism. I think it's by scholar Sayak Valencia, in which death has become the most profitable business in existence. And you also talk about this current time that we're living in with the genocide being perpetrated by Israel in Palestine. We're seeing what's happening in Ukraine as well, and a movement which is not new at all, but there seems to be an escalation and a real focus now on boycotting and divestment and sanctioning, and people are becoming more and more aware of how they are complicit through their use of certain platforms or through their through purchasing whatever items that are associated with this kind of death and destruction. So, yeah, I was wondering if you could reflect on that through your research, through your writing of technology and the internet, how those things have become so inextricably linked with the military industrial complex, and how we as consumers and people who use these platforms are affected as well.
Yeah. So I guess these platforms and the internet has always been some kind of double-edged sword in that it was never from the get-go created to be totally democratic. It's just that humans ourselves, we have used it in such a way that has encouraged collectivization and, we share information with one another. These are the ways we have managed to circumvent the original intentions of big tech platforms. And it went from 1.0 and now we're at 2.0, which means it's less of the more innocent internet that people tend to wax lyrical about. It's a particular technocracy, you can say, because all these companies are now blatantly, I mean, they have been in the background over time and they've always been capitalistic. I mean, let's not delude ourselves about that, but like now they're blatantly talking about working closely with governments and neoliberal institutions to change the way art and culture looks and is received. It's a kind of art washing while supporting the military industrial complex basically. And they're sort of creating this uncritical dependency, right, where people's natural curiosities are getting chipped away because as I was saying, the dark patterns that we have seen that is baked into Spotify, they're also baked in other platforms such as the meta ones like Instagram, Facebook, et cetera, et cetera. And if you do even a little bit of research online, you can see that there are all these different ways that these platforms are working to introduce more functionalities that then continues to harvest data, redirect moods, cause outrage in a way that is not productive to basically the survival of humanity. And yes, to sort of encourage a kind of new normal, which is, I think, in this particular time, which, we are living wartime because even though, right, say in so-called Australia, it doesn't look like physical war is here, as opposed to say in Palestine or Ukraine. But what we're seeing is a psychological war, an information war, if you will, where there's this constant butting up against of what's truth and what's not. And AI is a huge part of it. And it's basically the weaponization of these platforms, because it's not that these platforms in themselves are bad, because they can be useful, as we've seen, how in this current time of mainstream media's failings, we can share information and news very quickly in order to create a record and boost, say, mutual aid initiatives and things like that. So they have been weaponized to serve by these actors, basically, Zuckerberg and Meta, Musk and X, Eck and Spotify, et cetera. And it's been weaponized to serve anti-human pro-capital interests, so they can consolidate their power in the artistic cultural sphere that then, as I was saying, encourage a kind of new normal, which is, I think, a kind of revisionism, because it then leverages on, amnesia and speed to sort of rewrite history. And that's why you see so much decontextualization as well, which I think speaks back again to what I was saying about gentrification of the mind, because you kind of forget that there are predecessors and you're like, oh, this is new, this new thing, when actually it may not be.
That was an excerpt of yesterday's episode of Women on the Line, where I spoke to Cher Tan about Spotify and other big tech platforms. To read her article, Spotify is Worse Than You Think, head to killyourdarlings.com.au. And the book mentioned throughout the interview is called Mood Machine, The Rise of Spotify and the Costs of the Perfect Playlist by Liz Pelly. And Liz Pelly will be speaking in Nam at the upcoming Now or Never Festival. So for more information, head to nowornever.melbourne.vic.gov.au. And if you'd like to listen to the entire conversation, you can head to 3cr.org.au/womenontheline.
Emily Waramara is a singer, songwriter, and proud One Inch Jalequa woman, and we're going to listen to her latest single, Adore Me.
Feeling fine. and tell me that you're so.
Listening to Tuesday Breakfast, and we've just played Emily Waramara's latest single, Adore Me. And up next, we're going to be chatting to Mel Barker, who's the CEO of Western Port Biosphere, which is a not-for-profit organisation focused on creating a sustainable future for Western Port in southern Victoria. And recently, on the 31st of July, Federal Environment Minister Murray Watt has approved a proposed renewable energy terminal to proceed to an environmental assessment stage. And Mel's here to chat about the unique biodiversity of Western Port Bay and what's needed to ensure environmental protections alongside the renewable energy transition. Welcome to 3CR, Mel.
Thanks, Julia.
Thanks. Thank you so much for getting up early to chat to us. But could you start off by explaining what the Western Port Biosphere means and, kind of what the focus of your organisation is?
Sure. So just about an hour south of Melbourne is what's known as the UNESCO Biosphere Reserve. And what that means, it's a place of international significance from an environmental perspective that people live in. And so the one that we are in spans the whole of the Mornington Peninsula and then up around the top of Western Port and then down towards Millau, Phillip Island, with all of Western Port in the middle. So it's about 2,000 square kilometres. And I guess they're different from national parks because of that people element. So it's all about connecting people and nature. There's about 750 of them around the world, but there's only five in Australia. So there's three in Queensland and one at the bottom of Western Australia. But we're the only one kind of in southeastern Australia. And our foundation, as you said, is a not-for-profit. And so we've sort of got stewardship of the UNESCO status of the region and partner with governments and industry and community and business to try and find that sustainable balance between people and nature.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for explaining. I feel like a lot of people, you know, myself included, didn't exactly know what biosphere meant. And, yeah, that's really, special that we've got one of only five in Australia here in Victoria. I guess we've heard that recently the Federal Environment Minister has approved, for that renewable energy terminal to proceed to the stage of environmental assessment. Can you talk us through a bit like what that proposal is and what does an environmental assessment entail?
Sure. So the Victorian government's got a priority to move towards offshore wind for renewable energy, and they've got some, significant targets around that. And offshore wind involves some massive wind turbines, so it's really large equipment, and they're manufactured overseas. So what's required is a port for those manufactured components to be delivered to Victoria and partially assembled before they're taken back out into Bass Strait, which is where the proposed wind farms would be located. And so the Victorian government went through a process to choose a place for that sort of unloading and assembly facility, and they chose Hastings, which is in Western Port. And so the decision, as you said, by Minister Watt, is that it's to go through an environmental assessment. So it's known as an EES process, which is quite an extensive process. It involves more community consultation. But before it's allowed to construct, it would then need to go back to both the Commonwealth Minister as well as a State Minister for a decision as to whether the impacts of it are going to be acceptable or not.
Yeah, well, no, thank you for explaining what all of that actually means, because, yeah, it does get quite technical, you know, all these different layers of approvals and processes. But, yeah, why, in terms of, you know, the Western Port biosphere, why are you concerned about this proposal and what might it mean for Western Port? What might be some of the unintended consequences?
Sure. Well, Western Port itself is not only, I guess, the heart of our UNESCO Biosphere Reserve, but it's also what's known as a Ramsar wetland, which is a wetland of international significance. And so there's only, you know, certain wetlands that meet these criteria. And for Western Port, it's got all these really important ecosystems as well as species that call it home. So there's salt marsh and mangroves and seagrasses, which are not only important habitats, but are really effective at drawing down carbon, far more effective than plants on land. There's fish species that call it home, and these migratory birds that come all the way from Siberia every single year, and thousands of them to feed here. So it's a really important feeding ground for all these birds. And so the proposal itself has a number of different aspects to it, but I guess the ones that concern us the most involve Western Port itself, because it's proposed to do reclamation of Western Port. So, and it's not small scale, it's about 18 hectares is now proposed to be reclaimed. So effectively, you know, rubble put in Western Port to create a hard stand area for this terminal, as well as extensive dredging. And it's those impacts in particular that really concern us, and what impacts that might have on these feeding grounds and habitats for various species. So, I mean, all the science is not yet complete. So the Port of Hastings, who are the proponents, still need to do more work to understand and analyse all those impacts to determine whether they're going to be acceptable or not. So we're watching pretty closely, but as I said, really concerned from a biodiversity perspective to make sure that these things that make it so internationally significant aren't going to be damaged and harm both the mangroves and the salt marsh and the seagrass, but as I said, all these species that call it home as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think it sounds like, you know, there is that really fragile, you know, unique ecosystem in Western Port that, yeah, really could be at risk if, yeah, those major dredging and other works were to take place. And in terms of, you know, thinking more broadly about Victoria's transition to sustainability and, you know, building, you know, more facilities for renewable energy, what is Western Port Biosphere hoping, like, are you hoping through the assessment process that you might be able to find out if there's another more suitable site for building that terminal?
Well, I guess, you know, as an organisation, we, you know, very much support the accelerated transition away from fossil fuels. So, you know, would love to see 100% renewables in Victoria. And one of the things we've been seeking from the state government is just the transparency with the community about the site selection process that led to Hastings. There are other ports in Victoria, and it may be that they're unsuitable, but just that analysis that led them to Hastings, we just want that to be out in the public domain so that there can be a conversation with the community down here. There's a very passionate local community that love Western Port and just want to see, as I said, how they got to Hastings and, you know, to form their own opinion about is it the most suitable site for this in Victoria.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, having that clarity for the community is really important. And I think, Mel, this isn't the first time that Western Port, you know, has been the focus of, you know, energy developments. Of course, this time it's, you know, focused on renewable energy. But, yeah, could you talk us through a tiny bit of the history of, you know, other proposed energy developments in Western Port?
Sure. There's been a really long history for Western Port over, you know, decades really now of various proposals over the years. At one point it was flagged as a potential alternative container port for Victoria. The most recent one was a proposal by AGL for it to be a gas import terminal. And that went through an extensive environmental assessment process as well, and there was thousands of submissions from the community to that one, with a lot of concerns about the impact on Western Port. And in the end, the state minister in that case decided that those impacts would be unacceptable and the proposal was rejected. But I guess from our perspective, we've been partnering with a number of other organisations, including like Victorian National Parks Association and other local community groups down here, saying that, you know, rather than doing this kind of proposal by proposal approach and is it acceptable or not, what Western Port really needs, particularly because it's so internationally significant, is what we're calling for as a marine spatial plan that will really set the goalposts for what's appropriate for Western Port and what's not, so that we can, you know, make sure it's managed effectively into the future. You know, it's unusual to have a Ramsar wetland of international significance with a commercial shipping channel through the middle of it. And those things can coexist, but we're just saying they need to be managed effectively. And we feel like a marine spatial plan would be a great way of achieving that. And we've worked with the local councils down here. There's four local councils that fringe Western Port, and all of them have supported the concept of developing a marine spatial plan. We're really hopeful that that will be implemented soon, just so that we can stop dealing with this, you know, one-by-one approach that's really draining on the community, because EES is often involves thousands of pages of documents, and it's a really big burden on community. So it'll be good to have this overarching framework so we can kind of see what suits Western Port and perhaps what things might not be appropriate for here.
Yeah, definitely. It sounds like, you know, having that long-term kind of a plan and approach to be able to, you know, rather than, you know, as you're saying, Mel, have to consider each proposal one by one, to have that overarching, you know, framework so that, yeah, it doesn't have to be that laborious process each time for the community to have to stand up and voice their concerns. But, yeah, just in terms of, you know, I know that a lot of our 3CR listeners, you know, might either live near Western Port or be a regular visitor. How can our listeners find out more about, Western Port Biosphere and, support your work?
Sure. I guess if they want to find a bit more about our work, we've sort of got a website, which is www.biosphere.org.au, and also have socials if they want to follow our work and the events that we hold. And if we'll also be keeping people updated through those channels of when the next steps will be for this renewable energy terminal proposal. Following this decision by Minister Watt recently, the next step is for the Port of Hastings to do more work, but then that more work will then go back out for community consultation. So be keen for, you know, as many people as possible to participate in that process and provide feedback to the state government about their views on it. We'll certainly be following it closely, and I'm a member of a reference group for the terminal, so I kind of have a more regular and detailed insights into some of the things that are going on there, but really keen for the community to participate as well and share their views with government on what they think about this proposal as it goes forward.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's, you know, so important to get lots of voices from the community to be heard, by the government when it comes to Western Port. So thank you so much, Mel, for talking us through, you know, everything that's happening and how our listeners can also get more involved and find out more about, the campaign. But thank you so much for joining us this morning. Yeah, we really appreciate you making the time.
No worries at all. Thank you.
Thank you. And, yeah, hopefully we can have you back on to get an update in a few months. We've been speaking to Mel Barker from Western Port Biosphere about developments in a proposed renewable energy terminal in Western Port and what this could mean for the fragile wetland ecosystem. You can follow at @WesternPort_Biosphere on Instagram or visit their website www.biosphere.org.au.
We know you love listening to 3CR. But we also know that many of you haven't downloaded the Community Radio Plus app yet.
The app lets you tune in anywhere and share the station with your friends.
So, show the love and share the love and search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.
You're listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned to hear the rest of your 3CR podcast.
B leads the Asian Migrant Project at Vixen. They do outreach and support work and advocate for sex workers. They are also one of the co-founders of Justice for Our Sisters, a collective of Asian and Asian migrant sex workers in Nam. B spoke to Fung on the weekend about the ongoing raids by Australian Border Force that are targeting Asian migrant sex workers, Vixen's new project called Rising Red Lantern, and what is required to achieve full decriminalisation of sex work in Victoria. Listeners are advised that the following program includes descriptions of police raids and references to violence against sex workers. If you are a migrant sex worker in need of support, you can reach out to your local peer organisation. That's Scarlet Alliance for the Peak Body at www.scarletalliance.org.au or Vixen in so-called Victoria at www.vixen.org.au. If you need to talk to someone about the issues covered in today's episode, you can also contact QLife on 1800 184 527 or go to www.qlife.org.au. Here is part one of the conversation.
Hi, B. It's so nice to speak to you again for 3CR. I was wondering for maybe some new listeners or anyone listening who doesn't know who you are and the work that you do, are you able to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yeah. Hi, my name is B. My pronouns they them. I am currently working, at Vixen as the Asian Migrant Lead Project. So my work mostly doing outreach, doing support worker like as a frontline roles, and also doing advocacy at the same time. I am also a co-founder of the Justice for Our Sister, which is responded by Asian migrant sex worker in Victoria during the case of the Yu Shi Luo and Yun Suk Jung last year. And and today I'm going to tell you about new project. It's called Rising Red Lantern.
Thanks for that, B. Yeah, before we get into Rising Red Lantern, I did want to ask you some questions about the raids that have been happening under Operation Inglenook. We've spoken to you about those raids before in the past, but I was wondering if you could give us any updates about these raids since we last spoke in April this year.
Yeah, I remember we spoke around April before the action on the 17th, which is 10 hours. That's really amazing and powerful. And thank you, everyone, Asian migrant sex worker and all allies who showed up, and also 3CR women on the line, and also Tuesday Breakfast as well was showing up and also helping to spread the word. So after that day, we received the respondents from the Border Force said Operation Inglenook ended last year in December 2024. But in the reality is very different, because since the beginning of this year, we already supported at least 11 report of raids in Victoria, and 6 of them just in last 3 months. And from our will, it's pretty clear that Inglenook is just only a name, and the raid is still happening, and the harm workers still getting worse. I can give you few example here. In June, Vixen received a report from community member in Footscray, share the photo of the Border Force officer walking on the street. We know that Footscray is a western suburb, home of many migrant and refugees, right? I went there on the day, and unfortunately, at least 3 workplaces has already been raided. And some workers were even handed notice consider cancelling visa on spot. For my migrant worker, this feel really similar of the ICE raid in US, which using immigrants power to intimidate and deport. And there's more last month as well that I visited three massage parlors and again like reported raid and that it happened. And the one thing that I think is really important when I went there, one worker, the first question that they asked me was like, "Hey B, what is because I'm a sex worker?" And she was scared that even refused to take the condom from us. She worried that Border Force would use this as evidence and just same as the police did before the decriminalization. Well, this is like really clear and show that how rape is misleading worker into the thinking that sex work is still illegal here in Victoria, even though like we fight really hard to get decriminalizations. And another point that I want to make is like the fear that client now witnesses raids. And plus that they hear the story of the anti-sex worker and anti-immigration on the media. So somehow that they used it as threatening the workers, like, if you don't give me my money back or you don't do this service for free, I will call the police or immigration. So that's why like it's very clear and the raid, it must be urgent and need to be stopped.
Yeah, so it sounds like workers are being threatened not just by Australian Border Force, but now threatened by clients as well because of the anti-sex work sentiment that's being spread. Yeah, that's really full on, and I guess goes to show how important the work of Vixen and AmSwag are. You were saying that according to Border Force, Operation Inganook has ended. So were they able to give you any explanations as to why the raids have continued?
No, they didn't give any explanation about why this ended. They didn't give any explain it about why raid is still ongoing, but using as this is the kind of workplace compliance is kind of their job that they're doing this to prevent exploitation of the workers. They explain that's because under the migration law, they have the power to do this, that what we received.
Yeah, and we know that since those new laws were rushed in at the end of last year, we're seeing more and more cases where the rights of migrants are just being stripped away in so many different cases. And I guess for migrant sex workers and Asian migrant sex workers, it's not just anti-migration laws and sentiment, but also the intersection of anti-sex work as well. So these people suffer from both sides.
Yeah, totally.
When you've been speaking to the workers after they've had their workplaces raided, I guess how can you offer support? How do you offer support through Vixen and through AmSwag?
I think it's really hard, to be honest. We have really limited capacity, and most of the time that when raided happened, the worker kind of, engaging with my project or myself, like sending, "Hey B, raid happened." It's already happened like 3 days after, or really lucky that one days. But when I went there, many times a lot of worker when they receive the consideration canceling visa on spot, they decided to leave the country next day. And unfortunately, many of workers I wouldn't be able to even have a chat or talk with them. But the rest of the worker that who have their rights to work and on the visa that have their right to still continue in working, that is the problem because they feel like they can't come back to work. I went to one places where workplaces were twice in 1 week. I can see really clear, like usually on Friday might be like 12 workers roster on that day. But I went the week after the raid, it's just 4 workers, and all the worker is suffers from the financials that they couldn't be able to work. Some workers like stress and got traumatizing by that. What we do basically try to check in with them, and we can have the crisis funding. So we try to, using that money that from the donation to support the workers. And this is like, this is the thing that we try our best to support. And it not just where it happened three or 4 hours, but it's just a long ongoing support, ongoing need that worker likes facing. Some worker can't really go to the department store because when she told me that she saw the police, she ran away, even though she didn't do anything wrong. You can see like how impact and how triggered that could happen to the worker after the raids.
Yeah, just instilling so much fear after those raids and that ongoing fear. Like you were saying, it's not just happening during the raids, but it's lasting beyond that. And I imagine that would be so hard, feeling that you can't go anywhere or do anything without the risk of being arrested or the risk of being deported, having your visa cancelled. Perhaps even facing violence. So, yeah.
Yeah, and one thing, when workers might not come back to that workplace anymore, they might change to other workplaces that they didn't feel like they wanted to do or choose to do at the beginning. Because a lot of workers chose to do work in that workplace because they already built their friendships with the worker, they're already feeling trust with the space, we're already feeling safe. Another support that we do is like try to make sure that the place that they want to change, they that what they want and they feel safe. But unfortunately, a lot of workers after the raid, they just disappear.
You're listening to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast, and that was Vung speaking to B from Vixen and Justice for Our Sisters. And we'll be back with part two of that conversation at 8:15. And up next, we're going to listen to a new song by Gordy called Your Consolation Prize, which is from her new album, Like Plasticine.
You cut me out of stars, light in the dark, a quickening of a pulse, a beating heart. You held me in your arms, it felt so warm, and taught me how to see it all. But then all of the things that you believed kept me in a prison cell, aggrieved. Now everything has changed, but look closely, I am still the same inside. Watching on a loop, familiar scenes, molding me like I was plasticine. Tried my best to grab, it would.
Listening to Tuesday Breakfast, and we were playing a song by Gordy, Your Consolation Prize, from her new album Like Plasticine. And up next, we're going to be chatting to Rosa from Boycott Caltex, a grassroots collective of activists from the pro-Palestine climate and environment movement. The collective is campaigning for a free Palestine through a consumer boycott of Chevron, Texaco and Caltex petrol stations as part of the global boycott, divestment and sanctions movement. And Rosa is here to talk about how the collective came to be, why they are calling for that boycott of Caltex and actions taken so far. And next weekend is the National Weekend of Action, which is taking place across the country. So we're going to chat about that as well. Welcome to Tuesday Breakfast, Rosa.
Thank you. I'm very pleased to be here.
Yeah, we're very pleased to have you. To start off, Rosa, can you tell us a little bit about how the collective Boycott Caltex Australia started?
Sure. Well, I think, first of all, that it's part of a global boycott of BDS targets, which are companies that are selected against three criteria. And these are the level of complicity involved in their activities, the potential for forming a broad cross-movement coalition against the target from the beginning, and from the beginning we've partnered with environmental groups and local government groups. And the third criteria for selecting the targets is the possibility of success. So this is a worldwide movement. It's not just individuals taking actions, it's groups of people across the world taking actions. So it links local groups nationally with the international movement to boycott, divest and sanction Caltex and its parent company Chevron, because since 2023 Chevron has exclusively owned the Caltex brand in Australia as well as Puma service stations. And you might have noticed recently they've started moving into promoting their brand through a lot of sponsorships in sport, in notably the Brisbane Lions Football Club and the West Coast Eagles, and a number of other areas. So the way it started was in a very grassroots way. A group of comrades were attending the Melbourne APAN conference, and they formed the idea to create an action that was based on BDS and involved different groups across the movement and different groups across the country. So initially what they did was reach out to local government groups, and these were both in, a lot of these were in regional Australia actually, and we've always had a strong focus on regional Australia. So we then came together to organise a series of actions that, while each one is self-sustaining and each local group of Caltex anti-Caltex supporters do many different actions, including, you know, banners and postering and all the usual techniques. But three times a year we have a nationally coordinated day of action. Where all the groups do something at Caltex and we promote it nationally.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like, you know, it's really a collective that's, you know, bringing people together across the country and, you know, having that really broad and sustained series of actions as well, which is, really great to, you know, bring the community together to put forward the boycott. But can you talk to us a little bit more about, Rosa, why we're calling for the boycott for Caltex specifically, and how are they complicit in genocide?
Well, I think Chevron, which is well known amongst environmentalists, has fueled the genocide in Gaza, as in Israel's been bombing hospitals, homes, universities, schools, aid workers, everyone, you name it. Chevron has gas fields in the Mediterranean Sea that keep the genocide running, really. So without Chevron's power supply, the genocide would end. And it's complicit in also Israel's practice of depriving Palestinian people of control over their own natural resources. Chevron operates two large gas fields and illegal pipelines through Gaza. And in the eastern reaches of the Mediterranean Sea, there are vast reserves of natural gas. So for more than a decade, Chevron has generated billions of dollars in revenue for Israel's state coffers by plunging the depths of the Tamar gas fields. And since 2019, it's producing gas from the larger nearby Leviathan field. So you can see why it's a prime target or as a BDS target, because it's highly complicit.
Yeah, definitely. And just for those who might not know, Rosa, what's the... So is Chevron the parent company and then Caltex comes under it, or what's the structure there?
Since 2023, Chevron has exclusively owned the Caltex brand in Australia.
Okay. Yeah, that's good to know, to, kind of understand, you know, how it all works. And, thank you for as well explaining, you know, the details of what their complicity is in terms of, what's happening in the Mediterranean and in Palestine. And, can you speak a little bit more? I know you touched on this earlier about some of the what kinds of actions have been organised so far by Boycott Caltex Australia? And, how would you sort of characterise the response from the broader community?
Sure. The actions are very simple. Anyone can do them. For example, basically what we do is rally and with signs and placards outside Caltex service stations, with banners that are quite outward-facing to the road. We also leaflet. We have a high focus on education and educating the public about what Caltex are doing, because many people haven't got a clue. I've been protesting where people have started to drive in. We've given them a leaflet, explained what we're doing, why we're there, and they've turned around and driven out. We have optional oil company petrol stations that they can go to, so that, you know, there's usually clusters of service stations and we can say there's one just down the road. We know what their prices are, so we can tell them that, and quite often they're cheaper than Caltex, so that people who are driving in can get information. Maybe they won't stop this time, maybe they'll stop next time, but quite a few people have actually turned around and driven out when we've had a chance to talk to them. And we have big outward-facing banners to catch people who are driving, because Caltex are often on quite busy highways and roads, to get the message across to them.
Wonderful. I think, you know, it sounds like there's a really multifaceted approach of how the collective is trying to get the message across to people. And, I think you know, that idea of having people on the ground at the petrol station, you know, disseminating that information is really powerful and effective. And yeah, having also the banners too for the people who might not actually be stopping, but they're getting that information as they're driving is really key. And yeah, I guess so, you know, this weekend you've got that national weekend of action from the 22nd to the 24th of August. So can you talk us through, Rosa, like what the plan is for this weekend and what the actions are going to be across Australia?
Sure. I'm not sure whether your reach is national or Victoria only, but I can say that there are actions that will be held outside 12 different Caltex stations around Australia and in every state that Caltex operates, and it doesn't operate in Tasmania or the ACT, but it operates, most of its stations are in WA and Queensland. So it operates in all other states apart from the ACT and Tasmania. In Victoria, actions will be held at three stations, one in Traralgon, which will be from 2 to 3pm. These are short, targeted actions that we do that anyone can be involved in, and they don't take a huge amount of time or organisation. There's one in Preston at the Murray Road Caltex from 10am till 12pm, and in Ballarat from 2pm till 3pm. So they're the three that are happening. Now, if people want to get more information about the boycott in Australia, they can jump online to boycottcaltex.org. There's several Boycott Caltex sites, but ours is labelled boycottcaltex.org, which gives a full list of locations and times for, you know, nationally for the actions that are taking place this weekend.
Yeah, that's really helpful for people to look up. So yeah, we'll encourage people to go to the website.
And they can also on that website get lots of resource kits if they want to start their own actions, because this is driven by local people who start their own actions who affiliate with us. There's a complete toolkit for, you know, you can print off flyers with information about Caltex. You can print out a whole set of how to do instructions for how to run an action outside Caltex.
Yeah, awesome. That's such a great resource. And, I think it sounds like it's, you know, both very achievable for people to both, you know, participate in an individual action or to get involved and start their own action in their community. So, sounds like there's lots of different ways to get involved then, Rosa. And, before we wrap up, do you have any final thoughts on, you know, what you're hoping out of the actions this weekend or the campaign in general?
The campaign in general, obviously our aim would be to shut Caltex down in Australia. I mean, part of the reasons for choosing Caltex were Caltex has been operating in Australia for a long time. It's only since the end of 2023 that it has been owned by Chevron as an exclusive brand. So every station you go past that is labelled Caltex is a site not to go into and buy petrol from. So obviously we're hoping to encourage more people to understand that and to take actions as consumers, but also to join up with the wider action. If they go online to the boycottcaltex.org site, they can sign up, take the pledge not to use Caltex, and also receive ongoing information about upcoming boycotts.
Yeah. Thank you, Rosa, for it sounds like, that's really awesome as well with the pledge and, finding out ways to get involved with those upcoming boycotts. And, I think it's, definitely, you know, really important to have those big goals of, trying to, as you said, shut down Caltex across the country and, really you know, push for people to, you know, be spent, you know, putting their money where their mouth is. So, yeah, we really appreciate you coming on board and talking about this really wonderful campaign, and we wish you all the best for this weekend.
Yeah, and come along, anybody, to any of those places, Caltex in Preston, Traralgon and Ballarat this weekend. Jump online to get the dates and times for all the actions across Australia, including in Victoria, and just come along and join up with an existing group.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, Rosa. And, yeah, there's so many ways for people to get involved. And, want to thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rosa. Well, speaking to Rosa about the campaign to boycott Caltex, including how the organisation is complicit in genocide and the upcoming National Week of Action this Friday, 22nd of August to Sunday, 24th of August, taking place across the country. And you can go to boycottcaltex.org for more information. And yes, we'll be listening shortly to a further part of Fung's conversation with Bea in a little bit.
Because the Palestinian fight isn't just the Palestinians' fight, it's all our fight, because it's a fight not just about land, it's about a fight for freedom.
Everybody should be standing here today saying, free Palestine.
Solidarity with our Palestinian brothers and sisters. On behalf of the Gumbanja Nation, my people, who've never ceded their sovereignty.
We should be recognising Palestine as a state and recognising the rights of Palestinians.
3CR, stay tuned, stay radical.
The war on Palestine has not stopped. Palestinians need self-determination. Gaza must be free of Israeli occupation forces, have unconditional access to aid and reconstruction. 17 years of Israeli siege must end.
The West Bank needs the violence and attacks by the Israeli army and settlers to stop, and an end to the occupation and apartheid.
Your support to end the war on Gaza to bring peace, justice and freedom to all of Palestine is needed more than ever.
Join the nationwide rally on Sunday, the 24th of August, 12 noon, outside the State Library Victoria on Swanson Street.
With Netanyahu and Trump threatening to ethnically cleanse Gaza and annex the West Bank, we all need to stand up and say no.
Nationwide rally, Sunday, 24th of August, midday at the State Library.
With your support, Palestine will be free, from the river to the sea.
Free Palestine Melbourne is a 3CR supporter.
Earlier in the program, we heard part one of a conversation between Fung and Bea, who leads the Asian Migrant Project at Vixen. And here is part two of that conversation.
And so you mentioned earlier that there's a new project called the Rising Red Lantern Project. Can you explain what that is to our listeners and why it's so important to support this initiative?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for giving me the space to kind of spread the word about this project. So Rising Red Lantern is a campaign to support and also maybe inviting other community to stand along the side of Asian Migrant Project at Vixen in Victoria, which is, this is the direct response to issue that we discussing today, you know, the violence from the race, racism, isolation, state neglect, and also ongoing injustices faced by Asian migrant sex workers. I think the main that we want to focus on this campaign is like two things. One is about lack of the funding and support. We have also set up the fundraising account as well, so the community that can actually participate in, you know, working together with us and see advocacy and the resources and outreach that we do, and also you know, it's aimed to be more independent and the strong and proactive of the project, so not really need to rely on the government. And the second thing is about building the community connection. I think we choose the latter word because it's the meaningful of many Asian cultures, including Southeast Asia, that we see the lantern as a representative of the light, hopes, and also the way that connecting people and community together. And we also like want to honor and remember our sister and auntie as well, Yu Shi Lo, Yun Suk Jan, and Yugo, you know, that that they did reflect the systemic violence that's still facing and ongoing by Asian migrant sex workers. So, yeah, we would like to carry the memory like forward within our work. And I believe that, you know, having this project is going to be like the space to invite community to get involved more and to learn more together and share the journey together. That is how we can raise awareness and build a solidarity and take the meaningful step forward to justice and support Asian migrant sex workers.
Thanks for that, B. And yeah, it just reminds me of, you know, I think a lot of people felt really activated by what they were seeing in the United States with ICE raids and members of ICE, you know, walking around the communities, kidnapping people, intimidating community members. And it's important to remember that that is happening here in so-called Australia. Like you said, there were photos of Border Force walking around Footscray. And so, yeah, I think what you were saying just now about building community and solidarity across people, whether they're sex workers or not, is so important. My final question for you, B, today is about the decriminalization of sex work in so-called Victoria. You alluded to it before, but it sounds like, you know, we're not there yet in terms of full decriminalization. So what would that look like in this state? What would a full decriminalization of sex work look like?
Yeah, so easy to way to explain about full decriminalization of sex work for those folk who like still, you know, want to know more. So basically, you know, sex workers mean being treated as same as other jobs, you know, as same as doctor, as same as a teacher, as same as trainees, and also getting the police out of our workplaces. But here in Victoria, like we don't really have full decrim. In our movement, we call it partial decrim because the law still didn't cover all the form of sex work. Like street-based sex work is still criminalized. You know, for example, you cannot, street-based sex work cannot work near school, near the place worships, near the childcare services during the daytime. And if you do, there's still penalties and the worker could even face jail. And the problem is the law, it doesn't really clearly define like what NIAS means. So it's totally up to the police to decide. And that's give them a lot of power. And it leaves street-based sex worker at risk of being unfairly targeted. And for migrants, sex workers, many of us on the temporary visas, that means that we are still controlled under migration laws. And it limited hours of work. And in some cases, it's completely unlawful to do sex work. If you work outside of those rules, you can be detained and deported back home. So that's why, you know, rape is really harmful, that often frame as a, you know, protecting us. But in reality, they just use it to shake our visa and deport us. So until all sex worker frees from this law and threat, we can call that we have in Victoria full decriminalization.
Thank you for that, B. I was just wondering if there was anything else that you wanted to talk about or to share with our listeners before we ended our conversation today?
I think just stay tuned on the social media of the Vixen on the Rising Red Lantern. I'm still struggle with set up the Instagram account, which will be coming up soon, and maybe like more project as well. And I would like to see the community can, pick up this project and do something fun and beautiful together.
Well, thank you so much for joining us again on 3CRB. It was great to speak to you again.
Thank you.
That was Bea from Vixen and Justice for Our Sisters. To find out more about Rising Red Lantern, you can follow Vixen at VixenWorkers on Instagram or by going to their website www.vixen.org.au. If you'd like to support the Rising Red Lantern project, you can head to www.givenow.com.au/risingredlantern.
Bisexual Alliance Victoria is a not-for-profit organisation dedicated to equality and justice for multigender attracted people, including bi, pan, regardless of label or no label at all, their partners and allies. Bisexual Alliance runs discussion groups in person and online. The group offers a safe and fun space to share your experiences, ask any questions regarding your sexual identity, and provide peer support. Bisexual Alliance is especially keen to hear from multigender attracted people in regional and rural Victoria. Donations of $2 or more to Bisexual Alliance are now tax deductible. For more information, visit our website at bi-alliance.org, email info@bi-alliance.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter.
A 3CR supporter.
I'm bisexual.
You're listening to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast, and here's our events calendar for the week. So this weekend we've got from the 22nd to the 24th of August the National Weekend of Action Against Caltex taking place across the country, which includes an action in NAM on Saturday, 23rd of August from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at 71 Murray Road in Preston. On the 23rd of August at 1 p.m, there's going to be a film screening at Box Hill Library, and this is the film Gaza Doctors Under Attack. Also on Saturday from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Kensington Town Hall, there's the African Unity Fundraiser for Sudan and Congo. Finally, on August 24th at 3 p.m, there's at Trades Hall the Together for Treaty campaign kickoff. And also on Sunday, there's the Great Ride of Return NAM, which will be linking up with the Nationwide March. And that'll start at 11 a.m. At Royal Parade and Park Street, finishing at midday at the State Library. But we've had a really packed show today. So we started at 7:15, we heard from the most recent episode of Women on the Line, a conversation between Fung and Sher Tan, who was chatting about her recent essay, Delving into the Dark Side of Spotify, Its Ties to the Military-Industrial Complex, role in stripping artists of their rights and dignity, as well as homogenising art and culture. Then at 7:30, we spoke to Mel Barker from Western Port Biosphere, a not-for-profit organisation focused on creating a sustainable future for Western Port Bay. And we spoke about developments in a proposed renewable energy terminal in Western Port and what that could mean for the fragile wetland ecosystem. Then at 7:45, we heard a conversation between Fung and B from the Asian Migrant Project at Vixen, and they spoke about the ongoing raids by Australian Border Force that are targeting Asian migrant sex workers, as well as Vixen's new project called Rising Red Lantern and what's required to have full decriminalisation of sex work in Victoria. Then at 8 o'clock, we spoke to Rosa from Boycott Caltex, a grassroots collective of activists from the pro-Palestine climate and environmental movement, and we spoke to them about that campaign to boycott Caltechs, including how the organisation is complicit in genocide and the upcoming National Weekend of Action from this Friday to Sunday. And then finally, we listen to the second part of the conversation between Fung and B, who leads the Asian Migrant Project at Vixen. And that's all we have time for this week, but thanks for joining us.
3CR Breakfast would like to thank the New International Bookshop, Melbourne's radical bookstore and venue, for their financial support of this program. You can find Nibs opposite reception in the Lygon Street wing of Trades Hall, Carlton. Keep up to date with upcoming events at nibs.org.au.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.